Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, seeing deforestation on a global scale from space. And sky watching the planets Venus and Jupiter near the crescent moon. Here's a scientist's soundbite.
I think the most important thing people ought to know about the Earth's forests is whatever you're doing, whenever you're doing it, and wherever you're doing it, somewhere around the planet, there's going to be a tree falling, and that will not be replaced. We lose a football field's worth of forest every 4 seconds. Those are scary numbers. And Landsat is the eye on Earth that's allowing us to measure that, to monitor it, and also, importantly, to inform people and to distribute the information on where those changes are happening.
That's satellite researcher Alan Bellward. More with him later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
In what's been a very mild winter across the U.S. so far, a potent storm system combined with cold air from Canada to produce strong winds, cold temperatures, heavy snow, and freezing rain across the Pacific Northwest, beginning on January 18th. Seattle had 6.8 inches of snow. In areas that stayed above freezing, heavy rain occurred, as in Brookings, Oregon, which got over 4.5 inches of rain. At this recording on January 20th, forecasters are predicting several more days of heavy weather for the Pacific Northwest.
Wikipedia, Reddit, Craigslist, Wired, Boing Boing, and some 7,000 other online media sites protested on January 18th by blacking out or censoring part of themselves for a 24-hour period. The protests are against two bills, SOPA, now in the U.S. House of Representatives, and PIPA, now in the U.S. Senate. The bills are intended to stop copyright infringement, and they have the support of the U.S. film and music industries. But according to the sites that have protested, the bills endanger an open, secure, and free internet. According to reports a day later, U.S. legislators were deluged with calls and emails protesting the two bills on the day of the unprecedented internet blackout.
The Red Sea has a newborn baby island. NASA announced on January 17th that an underwater eruption of a volcano in the Red Sea appears to have stopped, leaving behind a newborn island. It's located about 60 kilometers or 40 miles off the coast of Yemen. The island began forming in December of 2011. It's essentially lava that has cooled after breaking through the surface of the Red Sea.
British scientists say that they have, for the first time, scientifically identified the facial expression of anxiety. They say it's a look that involves scanning one's surroundings, looking and listening, for the purpose of assessing risk. Dr. Adam Perkins and his team at the Institute of Psychiatry at King's College London conducted the research, which was published January 9th in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. That's our news of the week. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Up next is our song of the week. It's by the band Guns of Navarone, and it's called Put It to Rest. After that, science interviews.
Drive you insane, and I
Square Earth Sky, we interview the world's top scientists. Satellite researcher Alan Bellward studies changes to forests on a global scale. An essential tool for that is data from the Landsat satellite program, which has taken detailed pictures of forest canopies for over 40 years. Dr. Bellward heads the Land Resource Management Unit with the Institute for Environment and Sustainability, part of the European Commission Joint Research Center. He spoke to us from his research center in Ispra, Italy, about the most comprehensive survey yet of Earth's forests. Dr. Bellward, welcome.
I'm delighted to be here.
Please tell us about the Land Resource Management Unit. What does it do and what is your role in that?
The Land Resource Management Unit is one of eight scientific units. A unit is a group of scientists all working on a common theme. There are about 1,400 of us full-time here at this research centre in northern Italy. What we're doing is to provide scientific evidence for European policymaking on issues like climate change and global development, sustainable development programmes. Our policymakers have an increasing demand for science-based evidence to support their work, and that's one of our jobs, is to provide that evidence. In the land resource management area, it's basically the basic factor driving it is that natural resources, things like forests and land to grow crops, are getting more and more scarce. There's a lot more pressure on them. There's a lot of competition now. Do you use a forest as a carbon sink? Do you use it as a protected area for biodiversity? Or do you use it for fuel wood? There's all sorts of competing demands on our resources. And to make sensible decisions on trade-offs between different uses, you need evidence on where these resources are, what sort of condition they're in, how they're changing. And so that's the sort of area we're in, trying to balance policy decisions on the basis of detailed information on just where the natural resources are, what condition they're in, and how it's changing.
Tell us a little bit about your involvement recently in something called the Global Forest Remote Sensing Survey for the United Nations. This assessed how humans are changing forests on a global scale. What did you find and how was it done?
This is something that the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization has actually been doing since the 1940s. Every few years, they produce this detailed report on the state of the world's forests. These reports rely on statistics provided by the different countries around the world. I think more than 190 countries give them statistics on where the forests are and how much of it there is and what they're doing with it. But for the last few years, they've also been running a remote sensing survey. So they've been using satellite imagery as an independent assessment of what the state of the forest resources are. And what the latest survey has done, which we worked with them as one of the partners on that survey, what they found is that about 30% of the whole planet's land area, certainly in 2005, about 30% of it was covered in forest. And rather worryingly, between 1990 and 2005, we've lost about 180 million acres of forest. That's rather a lot. If you actually take 180 million acres over those 15 years, and you think about what that means on a human scale, if you think about something like a football field, everybody that goes to a football game, it doesn't matter whether it's a European football match or a US football match, the field's more or less the same. And most of us can picture what that football field looks like. Now, if you can imagine that all covered in forest, it takes something less than 4 seconds to lose that entire area of forest. So we're losing about a football field's worth of forest every 4 seconds of every minute of every day. And that's lost. That's net loss. That's including all the new trees that have been planted around the world. When I say we've lost 180 million acres, that's really gone. That's not been replaced by new stuff. So it doesn't matter what you're doing or where you're doing it, somewhere around the planet there's a tree falling, and it's fallen for good.
How is satellite data from Landsat used in this Global Forest Remote Sensing Survey?
Where Landsat comes in is because it's a global system. So we're looking at every point on the Earth's surface with the same amount of detail, with the same scientific rigor, if you like. We're making the same measurement. And that's extremely important because it means when I make a statement about forest cover change around me here in northern Italy, or you, or in the center of the African Congo Basin, we're using the same measurement, the same precision to it. And what we've done with the colleagues in the UN FAO is we've taken about 13,000 plots around the world. Now, these are distributed uniformly. So every 60 miles or so, north, south, east, west, we take a sample plot and we map the change in an area of about 25 acres. And then that is done 13,000 times in 1990, in 2000, in 2005. Because, of course, the other delightful thing about Landsat is, because it's up there and orbiting, it comes back time after time after time, so that we can look at this change over time. We can keep going back to the same 13,000 points and find out what's happened.
You know, how important is Landsat in monitoring how humans are changing forests on a global scale?
I have to say Landsat has been, it's an absolutely unique tool for us. And I think it's unique for three reasons, really. One is the longevity of the program. I mean, where else can we get a chance to look back at part of the world for 40 years? We can go back to 1972 for various points on the planet's surface and look at how that forest has changed, or, I mean, not just necessarily forest, but in our particular instance, that's one prime concern. So longevity is a dramatic factor. It's the definitive source. It's the only way we can go back that far in time consistently around the planet. That second point is consistently around the planet. It's global. Right from the beginning, the people managing the Landsat program have gone out of their way to make sure that there's imagery from different parts of the world. You've not just concentrated on the US, for example, which would have been perhaps a natural thing to do. You know, you've looked everywhere. And then the final real bonus is over the last few years, since the data archive was opened up for free and open access. And those three factors, the longevity, the global data acquisition program, and the free and open data access, have really, it is a wonderfully valuable resource for forest monitoring.
You've been listening to satellite researcher Alan Bellward of the European Commission Joint Research Center. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Who's your favorite scientist or science story? Tell our community on Facebook as EarthSky, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, the planets Venus and Jupiter near the moon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Jorge. This is going to be the best month and the best series of months for some time to see the planets Venus and Jupiter. So first, I want to mention some specific dates that you should mark on your calendar. The first one is January 25th and 26th. The moon will be a waxing crescent in the evening sky after sunset, and it'll be in the west in the same direction that the sun just went down. And right next to the moon on January 25th and 26th, as seen from around the globe, both hemispheres, you know, all time zones, will be the planet Venus.
Yeah, beautiful crescent moon and a star near that, the planet, actually. It looks like a star, the planet Venus.
That's right, and there's more. The planet Jupiter is also in the sky right now, and over, the days after the 25th and 26th, so that's the January 27th, January 28th, 29th, 30th, the moon will be waxing in the evening sky and moving closer to Jupiter. So first you'll see this really bright Venus in the west after sunset with the moon close to it, and then the moon will start moving up toward another really bright object, Jupiter, and there'll be a couple days where the moon is in between Venus and Jupiter, and then by the end of the month, say the 29th, 30th, the moon will be closest to Jupiter on the sky's dome. So it'll be a really great time to watch those two very bright planets. And by the way, those two are the brightest objects in the sky besides the sun and moon. So it should be a spectacular sight.
Yeah, it's fun to stay out long enough to actually see the moon kind of pass through and see how these the different juxtaposition of the planets Venus, Jupiter, and our satellite, the moon, actually kind of change in the sky a little bit.
It's very interesting from day to day to see that. And, you know, when you see the moon waxing in the evening sky like that and moving with respect to these planets, what's really happening there is that from one day to the next, you're noticing the moon's motion and orbit around Earth. So that's a very cool thing to realize, that if you stood there on January 25th and 26th, then by the 27th, you're going to see that the moon is located a little farther to the east on the sky's dome, a little closer to the planet Jupiter. Then by the 28th, 29th, 30th, the moon is even closer to Jupiter. And that's really happening because the moon is moving in orbit around Earth.
It's also a great time to take out some binoculars or something and take a look at Jupiter. I love looking at Jupiter through binoculars and being able to maybe make out just a little tiny speck of the little moons that go around Jupiter as well.
Oh, yeah, it's so cool to do that. And you can also use your binoculars to look at the moon. And, of course, the best time to do that is just around sunset, just as the sky is beginning to get dark, when the moon isn't super bright in the night sky. So there's not like a huge contrast between the darkness of the sky and the brightness of the moon. When the sun is just set and the moon is just beginning to get bright is a really great time to take a look at it with your binoculars.
And so what else is coming up?
Well, so these same two planets, Venus and Jupiter, are really the planets to watch over the next few months. And if you notice them in these last few days of January, you're going to have a ringside seat on seeing these two between now and the month of March. So what's going to happen between now and March is that Jupiter is going to be pulling closer to Venus while Venus is getting a little higher in the western twilight sky. Jupiter is going to be sinking down into the western twilight sky, getting closer and closer and closer to Venus. By mid-March of 2012, these two are going to have a spectacular conjunction in the western twilight sky. So start watching them this month and you'll be all set to your friends with your astronomy knowledge in February when the moon passes them again, and then finally in March when Jupiter and Venus are going to be like, you know, twin headlight beams there in the western sky, super bright and very cool looking.
Yeah, sky watchers have something to look forward to: the moon, planets, Jupiter, and Venus.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be absolutely the best few months for sky watching coming up here that we've had, or at least for planet watching coming up this January, February, March of 2012 that we've had in some time. So I am personally planning a camping trip for the month of March 2012 so I can see the planets, Jupiter and Venus, and the moon. That'll be, you know, right around those same dates, right around the 25th, say, of March would be a good time to plan a camping trip. Around that same time, around the month of March, the planet Mars is also going to be very, very bright on the other side of the sky, not in the western sky after sunset, but in the eastern sky after sunset. So March of 2012, ooh, mark your calendar. Good sky watching month.
That sounds fantastic. And also, if you're planning some kind of trip like that for kids, earthsky.org has sky charts that will tell you what to find and where and how.
That's right. You come to the tonight section at earthsky.org, and we have a little calendar there on that page, and you can click through all the way to the calendar for the month of March and pick out dates that will work for your family or your camping trip or your friends or however you want to do it. But just do it. It'll be great.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Guns of Navarone, Mellow Grand, The Black and White Years, 100 Flowers, and Sleep Good. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much
backstage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt you. What you don't know.